So when you hear the term or the phrase progressive overload is king, I think it's really important that you start to understand that progressive overload can be important, is important at some level, but isn't important for everyone at all levels. And I'll explain really what that means. And maybe I'll explain progressive overload a little bit deeper and give you guys some applicable concepts that you can apply right now to understand and ultimately apply. So progressive overload is simply the idea that if I put my weight on the bar, I'm getting stronger, therefore I'm getting bigger. If I put an extra rep into my training in the same exercise, I get better, I get bigger. And unfortunately, that's not true, right? It's never linear, right? It's never that simple. It's never black and white, right? People like to think in these polarities. It's simply not ever the case, or not certainly not often the case. And so the reason why Coach Steve and I, the conversation prompted this for me was Coach Steve is an exceptional athlete who executes the exercises he does with a very high degree of physical competency, right? He's very physically capable. And this is, sorry, there's a bug right there. This is very important to acknowledge. So most people, if we talk about, let's say we made mastery of an exercise 0 to 100 on this continuum. And let's say we said everything over a 90, you're a master. Everything around let's say 50 and below, you're still learning. Most people are probably somewhere in the range of like 30 to 60, right? Most people in their ability to execute, they're somewhere in the mid-range. Like, they're not terrible. They're certainly not beginners, but there's a huge opportunity for them to progress. And so in my experience, in my opinion, I could probably validate this pretty well. The only time when progressive overload is truly king is once you've reached unconscious mastery of an exercise. Unconscious mastery, if we're looking at the continuum of 0 to 100, you're over a 90, right? You're certainly over an 85. And why is that? Well, because then we know that we've standardized the rep, and the standardization of the rep is not, it sounds simple, but it's not easy. How many of you could recognize that sometime in the last 5 days when you're doing any exercise, you pick it, could be the one you're best at and you love, in the beginning of a set, the middle of a set, and the end of the set, those reps didn't always look or feel the same? And can anyone acknowledge that? Sometimes it changes, right? And sometimes your body starts doing different things. Sometimes you start finding ways to avoid work and cheating. So therefore, how could we rationalize and say, if I did one more, that it's going to progress? It's going to somehow equate to automatic progress. It doesn't make sense. So in order to really truly benefit from the concept of progressive overload, the prerequisite must be standardization of the stimulus, standardization of the rep. And so what that means, or what that means to you, is we should all aspire to standardize a very small number of the highest impact exercises that we can. Here's the thing. High impact exercise, what does that mean? It means an exercise that fits your body and you can do with a high degree of physical competency, very high degree of physical competency. Now, here's another thing to think about. Your body is not the same as mine. Your body is not the same as Coach Steve. Your body's certainly not the same as Coach Chris. My body's not the same as Coach Chris, even though we have the same haircut. Therefore, the exercises that work most effectively for us are not always the same. So one of the primary objectives of our coaching is to find the exercises that work really well for you and help you to, one, first get there, get to mastery, and then two, use those exercises on a often repetitive basis to get maximum progress. Because I think one of the big mistakes people make in training, and this is hard to convey to clients, right, is too much novelty is not a good idea. And sometimes repetitiveness is a very good idea. Sometimes doing the same stuff week in, week out is the best way to make progress, or one of the best ways to make progress, because as you could imagine, if you did the same exact workout for 4 weeks in a row, same 5 days repeated over and over and over again. So five separate days repeated for 4 to 6 weeks. By the end of that 4 to 6 weeks, you'll probably be measurably better at the exercises you're doing during that week. So your level of competency has gone up. Therefore, your level of mastery is higher. Therefore, your ability to put work through a muscle is increased. So the objective is we want to get to what we call unconscious competence, which means I do this exercise with a high degree of mastery and I don't have to think about it, right? Your body just does it. We all have those exercises. You're like, or maybe when we type or when we sign our, the best example I often use is when you sign your name. Don't think about it. You just do it. Unconscious competence. But if I ask you to sign your name with the other hand, it's like really slow and messy and like, you know, very awkward, right? And so that's kind of a good comparison. So many exercises are this like slow, awkward, like I got to be really, really intentional to what the hell I'm doing. I got to like pay attention to it, otherwise it looks like shit. Versus like, I'm going to master this because I can do it very well with my other hand or with my proper hand. And so when it comes to understanding what progressive overload truly is, because I should say progressive overload should be the goal. It's an aspirational state, right? But 90% of the people that I meet in the gym or certainly in this coaching aren't there yet. And so a lot of your training, a lot of your programming should be directing you in this direction of physical competency and mastery of exercises, mastery of a small number of exercises. Now, for some people that can take 3 months, 1 to 3 months. For some people that can take 3 years. What's the difference? Well, diligence, presence, presence meaning like how present am I? Am I actually paying attention to what am I doing? Health of the nervous system, how much time, effort you're putting into recovery. All those things can play into how quickly your nervous system ultimately adapts and learns. Your athletic history, that can play in pretty significantly to how quickly your body adapts and learns. So kind of objectively here, I'd like for all of you in the next 7 days to go away and start paying a little bit closer attention to what would physical mastery feel like? And I'll try to define it for you before we get off this call. So if we were to pick any exercise and we were to say, well, the goal, and this is a muscle building objective, not necessarily a strength objective, because those can be different. So if we say the goal of an exercise, you could pick anyone, is to build muscle. Then the way we would qualify a really well executed exercise is the first step is, can I take this thing through a full range of motion, just full range, no consideration of weight at all, no consideration of contraction, can I actually literally travel through the full excursion at, and it's usually a single joint or maybe it's multiple joints, but can my, let's say squat, can my ankle joint, my knee joint, my hip joint go through the full range necessary to get me into this position in both directions, right? So do I have the adequate mobility? Then do I have the adequate prerequisite stability to go to each subsequent position and not move? Stability is the ability to not move, to resist force. And then do I have the strength to move through this skill and overcome force, right? Mobility, access the range, stability, control the range or not move. Three, strength, overcome the force, overcome the amount of resistance against my body. So we go through each exercise and look through those three lenses. We say, well, do I have the mobility? Yes. Do I have the stability? Can I stop? Yes. And can I then overcome some other external force against my body? Hopefully the answer is yes. And if you meet all those three criteria, then the mastery is a graded thing that happens over time, which means mastery at 10 pounds is not the same mastery as 20 pounds, not the same mastery as 40 pounds, not the same mastery as 100 pounds. And so it's this graded ascension toward physical competency at the highest level of resistance or force against our body that we can. Is everybody with me so far? Or am I using terms that you're like, what the hell is this guy talking about? Because terminology is a big gap, isn't it? Like sometimes if I speak and you're like, what is he, like, it needs to be, I try to speak in simple terms. So it's second nature. Is anybody not following me? Just raise your hand. Anybody need me to clarify? Don't be ashamed. Okay. So then if you know you can get into the range, you can stabilize in the range, you can move through the range. Now the mastery comes from how well do I contract at every position of this range of motion? right? And so realizing this, your body doesn't want to contract anywhere. Your body's trying to like avoid all possible work and minimize work. As an example, Richard, I see you riding that bike right there. While you're riding that bike, I'm not going to pick on you, but while you ride that bike, see if you can become aware of how many points on the circle or the oval are you actually pushing with your quads? And so at certain points, you'll realize you're accelerating through it, and then it's you're kind of catching it again on the other side, right? Try not to do that. Try to like consistently push through the entire arc. Just try it. Roll with me. I'm gonna take you through something. Can you push all the way down and push all the way down? Now on the way up, can you pull on the way up with your hamstring? So it becomes a push and then a pull and then a push and then a pull, right? So you're becoming aware of how much actual work is my muscle doing? And you'll notice almost instantaneously, if you shifted from not doing that to doing it, your heart rate will go up. You'll start to sweat a bit more. Like, oh, this actually hurts a bit more. Like instantly you went from doing as little possible work as you can to make this thing go around in a circle to now doing more work and not as much work as you possibly can, but certainly more, right? I just made you aware of it. So we can do this with literally every exercise. The bike is just an example. We can do it with every exercise. And so you say, okay, well, what is actually moving me through space? Is it the muscle I'm trying to train, or is my body just launching it, right? Which is, and launching in a bicycle makes a lot of sense. You're like, oh, I'm just going to do as little as I can because you're trying to get the time done. But in reality, you're not trying to get the time done, right? You're trying to get the results from the time invested. So Richard, if you can just spend the rest of your time on the bike, even if you have to slow down a little bit to keep that push-pull, you're trying to have equal amount of tension through the entire arc, it'll completely change how that exercise feels to you. And that's a good thing. Okay. And that's how all exercises, that's the opportunity that exists within all exercise, right? It's this ability to become internally aware, internally present, and then say, okay, well, at what point in this exercise am I cheating? So now with Steve, he's a high degree of physical mastery. And even him, well, I should say this, there's a lot of nuance to how we converse. But the first step that I'm cueing him on is I want you to be intentionally trying to contract harder at every segmental centimeter or inch of every rep, like using my brain to contract harder at every rep of every range or every inch of every range with me. That's what mastery starts to look like. And once we're there, then we can start so we said first we're going to qualify, right? Quality. Then we're going to quantify quantity. And once you do the qualification, you can do the quantification. But until you qualify, you shouldn't quantify. You really can't quantify. And here's where people go wrong. I'm going to finish with this. Here's where people go wrong. You're comparing muscle building against powerlifting and athletics, and it's not the same thing. Strength training and muscle building are often at two polar ends of the extremes. Strength training, the goal is I'm trying to be as efficient as possible, use as little muscle as I possibly can, and ultimately get this thing to move from here to here with the greatest amount of linear force. Whereas with hypertrophy, muscle building, I'm trying to be as inefficient as possible and use as much muscle as possible. It's the opposite, right? So when we're trying to maximize, whether it be muscle building, whether it be fat loss, which is ultimately caloric expenditure and muscle calorie turnover, the goal should be to contract muscles and make it harder, not make it easier. I'm going to stop right there. Coach Chris, anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, I was actually just going to type a little something in the chat to everyone. I'll give you an example of where it differs. Two of you are going to be doing a lower body workout tomorrow or the next day. So Chris Wells is on here. His training objective is to put on size. So we are striving for hypertrophy. Hypertrophy in everything we do. We sleep to grow, we eat to grow, we rep to grow. Simon Dutton, who's new to the program, who just got married and he's already missing his first call. I don't blame the new wife. He's just not on this call right now. But Simon is training for strength specifically. Simon will be doing his first strength training workout. Simon's workout, he has 11 sets of squat, and the most amount of reps he does on one set is 5, and the least amount of reps he does on one set is 2. Chris, would you like to unmute yourself if you have it memorized? What does your squat workout look like? Or what's your workout with squats look like for your next workout?
All right, so we've got a fun one. Back squats. The first set is a tempo of 5 seconds on the eccentric, pause at the bottom, 1 second coming back up, zero pause at the top. So that's 8 reps. Rest time is 30 seconds. And then I'm doing the exact same weight, almost in like a piston fashion per your description, coach, for 8 more reps. Rest for 60 seconds. Set two is 3 seconds on the way down, zero pause, 1 second on the way up, zero repeat for 12 reps. Rest is 30 seconds. And then I'm going to go fast again in that piston fashion for 6 reps. Set three, tempo is 101, 15 reps, rest is 45 seconds. And I'm repeating that. Let's see here, repeating that layout for set 4 and 5. And yeah, and that's just back squats.
So in his leg day, he has multiple leg exercises. The first leg exercise for him, he's going to do a total of 5 working sets, doing about 15 to 16 reps per set. The coaching cues we have for Chris is knee flexion, elevate the heel, drive with the knee to stretch the quads, then to shorten the quads, and to go to full fatigue. The coaching cues we have for Simon are to squat with his hip crease just below 90 degrees, not beyond that, just 90 degrees, because that's the standard we have for his strength goal. 2 completely different objectives, and they should have 2 completely different programs. Strength training and hypertrophy training are not the same things. Chris has no idea what weights to use. Well, he has an idea, but I didn't tell him what weights to use. I selected every single weight for Simon for all of those sets. He's training the weight. Chris is training the outcome, full fatigue, muscular pump, trash the quadriceps. So there's a difference between two, and it's important to understand the difference and not be married to the weight, and understand that how you exercise, how you rep matters way more for hypertrophy training.
Thanks, Chris. Great summary. That workout sounds horrible.
I did suggest maybe your first set start at 95 pounds, actually. I didn't say you had to, but I said maybe start at 95 and let Jesus take the wheel from there.
Yeah, saw that. Thanks.
Love it. Coach Stevie, anything to add?
Well, you said something really good that I think that I would love to hear you kind of just talk about, which is that I'm picking the right exercises for everybody, right? Because I find that a lot of people think, and I found this, maybe Chris, you don't know this from Good Life, I find a lot of people, general population, feel that the right exercise, what that means is what they feel they're able to do best. But like I obviously know, especially from the past couple of days, the right exercises is not what you do best. The right exercise is what you need. And I just think it would be nice to hear you talk about it.
Yeah. There's a lot of potential ways to approach answering that question. And so there's a lot of things that go into making a decision when it comes to being a coach and how we select exercises. And so obviously the goal is a primary consideration. Physical capability is a primary consideration. Structural balance is a primary consideration. All of these potential things are playing in the back of my mind, in the back of our minds as coaches, as we make decisions on what exercises are most effective. And ultimately looking at what is your current level of capability? What are your deficiencies? And if we make those deficiencies better, does that make you better overall or not? Right. And often the answer is yes, but not always. So sometimes going after things you're not so good at is important. So as an example, you know, Bulgarian split squats is, you know, sometimes a favorite exercise and a dreaded exercise. But one of the benefits of the number of benefits of Bulgarian split squats is enormous. But one of the benefits that's kind of a side benefit is what's happening. So if you think of Bulgarian split squats, if you don't know what it is, it's like back leg is up on a bench or a plyo box or something, and front legs on the floor. And that back leg is stretching, right? You're getting a lot of stretch through the quad, you're getting a lot of stretch through the hip. while really we're loading the front leg. So the load is going through the front leg, teaching the front leg how to contract from full amounts of knee flexion. And so while the exercise itself isn't any, you know, inherently any, from the outside any different than a lunge, there's additional side benefits, as an example, that may benefit. Like, let's say, for example, you sit a lot in your job. Bulgarian split squats may be a very good idea, because as you're eccentrically loading the quad, you're also lengthening the back hip and lengthening the back quad. So just give you an example of like these fringe thoughts and fringe benefits that come into selecting exercises. So yeah, I guess just to touch on Steve's point, we want to find exercises that fit you well. It's very important. We want to find exercises that you feel really well, but not always. But often we want to select exercises that make you better long-term. And sometimes those exercises feel horrible. Like, this feels like shit. I don't feel like, as an example, one of the best ones is a single arm dumbbell row. Like 95% of people I meet suck at a single arm dumbbell row. Yet I probably have it in 90% of the programs. And simple reason is I think it's really good at teaching people how to use their lat. And people are like, I don't feel this exercise well. I don't want to do it anymore. And I'm like, tough. We're going to do it every day or every workout, right? And because it has benefits that you may not be aware of. And so sometimes we have clients who are, you know, stubborn or set in their ways, and they're like, I don't want to do this exercise. Sometimes as a coach, we have to explain the why. And sometimes you have to be able to say, tough, like this is what your body needs right now. Funny, both those exercises are two exercises that one client of mine is like, I'm never fucking doing these things again. Why do you put them in my fucking program? I was like, oh, you'll see them again on Tuesday. I hope you enjoy it. but anyways, yeah, so there's a lot that goes into, you know, joint positioning, structural balance, balancing joint forces. Obviously maintaining mobility and physical capability is there. So yeah, there's a lot that plays into how we select exercises for them. And some people, as an example, don't need the depth of thought, right? They don't need hugely nuanced exercise. They just need to fucking move. Whereas some people like Steve, who's like very advanced, needs much more advanced stuff. Right. And so, that's the way we think of it. Steve, is that covered?
Oh, absolutely. Like, I just had a client that just left a one-on-one that I've been training for. She's a friend of mine. I've been training her for like 5 years now. And she's an example of that, because like I would love to ship her to Chris. It would be amazing, because like, she just has like the longest femurs. She's a human femur. And so what feels good is very different than what she needs. Right. Because she really, really avoids anything with any forward knee flexion because of that, her knees hurt. And then the second that she does what she wants, which is, I want a low bar squat. Like, if you put a buffalo bar on this woman's back, she can squat 400 pounds in an instant, no pain. But then the second I get her to do a split squat body weight with her knee forward, she's like, ow, my knees hurt. So it's really crazy on how, again, what she needs is very different than what she wants, and how she measures what she thinks is a good exercise for her.
That's a great example. And so, guys, if your knee hurts in an exercise, it doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad exercise. It may just mean that you're not prepared to do it, or you're doing it incorrectly. And so sometimes as coaches, we want to push the envelope on those, not obviously to hurt your knees, but to find something that, you know, we realize like, hey, if you simply do this exercise, you maybe like open up your ankle mobility, as an example, which is probably the case with this girl, or get your knee tracking properly over your foot, all of a sudden your knee doesn't hurt anymore. So we choose an exercise, give you some very specific cues and say, oh, okay, now doing it this way, my knee doesn't hurt anymore, right? So there's a lot of nuance, like way more than you know. And I think this is a big gap in the fitness industry, just en masse. Like, so when people consider programming, people write programs from a powerlifting athletic perspective, and it's all numbers. Nobody's thinking about quality and like path of motion, exercise selection. So I would say exercise selection and quality score, I think, are probably the two most important variables in programming. And if you ask 95% of the coaches out there, they don't even consider those. It's really just about like more weight on the bar, more reps, how much volume. And I think that's a huge glaring opportunity, which, you know, coincidentally is going to be built in very deeply into our certification, which actually starts next month. So that's fun. We're teaching people the thought process behind exercise selection and quality of exercise. Anyone have questions about that specifically? Exercise selection, progressive overload, even programming.
I got a question you can run off, Ben. I have a client that I had a conversation with, and when he's going through his programming, one of the things we talked about is like, you know, making sure he's comfortable in gaining confidence, you know, confidence through executing weekly on, you know, progressing something. And he could do that. He doesn't have a spotter. He works out alone. And so there's a lot of things mentally he's battling, but what he was having an aversion to is always pushing weight. I'm like, it's not about weight. Like there's many different things that we can quantify progression with. That's just one of them. But the conversation was about like making sure that there's no like detraining, you know, for lack of a better term, going on in the sense that, hey, pick something and push into it. But what he was doing without knowing it is like whenever he would move one variable, he'd totally back off the next. And I was like, okay, so let's talk about this, right? And there's obviously a lot more things in the background for this, but I thought it was definitely a good thing to bring up just because I think that maybe some people might do that without knowing it. Like instead of challenging something, they just take the reins back. So it's like, you tell your client, okay, this week we're going to do 10 reps, but next week we're going to do 12 reps. And then the second that they are confronted with that, they just dial the weight right back. So then they actually didn't really challenge themselves. They just equalized the scales of justice again. So there's no, like you said, progressive overload going on.
Yeah. So it sounds like weight selection, right? And people ask that question a lot. And you and I had that conversation yesterday. Is like, where should I be failing? And you know, if 1 week I'm doing 10, the next week I'm doing 12, well, what percentage do I regress, or do I regress at all? Do I just try to grind through those next two? And that's definitely an experience thing. That's definitely a nuanced thing. It's not always easy to navigate percentages of weight to adjust for changes in reps. But I'll tell you what, guys, like the general rule of thumb is form failure, right? If your form is failing, that's the number of reps we're looking for. And we don't necessarily want it, certainly in the phase where you're learning, you're improving your quality, going after ugly, messy, sloppy reps that involve, you know, all this body English and momentum doesn't benefit you. So Steve brought up a really point that I didn't really discuss is, so people who are chasing weights, chasing numbers on the bar, I think one of the most important lessons that I learned is, so, I mean, I've used this lesson on this call before, but not everyone's been on every week. So if I'm holding a weight in my hand, let's say this weight right here is, let's say, 10 pounds. Do you know the only time that this weighs 10 pounds is when it's not moving? I think people don't realize that. It actually changes the amount of, you know, resistance that it's exerting against the body as it's moving. So if I throw it up in the air, as it's going up, it's actually getting lighter and lighter and lighter. And it gets to the top, it's weightless. It hangs for an instant. And as it comes down, so it's zero, and it starts accelerating and actually gets more weight. And as it gets to the bottom, then it hits the bottom at more than 10 pounds of force. So if I'm launching weight, like you see people doing a bicep curl, a 10 pound weight isn't always 10 pounds. It changes. And I don't think people know that. Right? Acceleration changes the amount of resistance that, so, and you'll know that if you just like do this with a weight at the bottom, it's like, oh shit, I have to use a bunch of momentum to move this thing. Kind of like we're, you know, Richard on the bicycle, and I'm not picking on you, Richard, but like if I throw the pedal from the top and I don't push through it, I just throw it, it just coasts. I don't have to do work. I just throw it and then it coasts, and I catch it around when it comes around again, I throw it and it coasts. So I'm doing this much work rather than this much work, right? And so I may be doing more work instantaneously for this really short amount of time, but then I'm resting the rest of the way. And that's what exercise looks like for most people, is it's just like throw and then, yeah, physics. It's this throw and then catch and throw and then catch. And you're just losing this massive opportunity that is the rest of the range. So you're getting challenged in this small segment of the range where you're very strong, but the segment of the range that's not getting exposed to resistance is very weak and will become progressively weaker as this one specific aspect becomes stronger. The difference becomes great. The gradient becomes significant. So yeah, that's, you know, that's literally physics. And first time somebody told me exercise was physics, I was like, what? Like, what? I'm like, yeah, it's all physics. It's forces. Yeah, that's it, man. That's how people tear muscles, period. I really believe that if you're training the way we train, the way we advocate training, or hurting yourself in the gym is almost an impossibility. Like, I don't think it's possible. I've never seen anyone hurt themselves training properly, ever. Right? I've never hurt myself in the gym. I did once, and I was training. I was just being an idiot. I was wearing jeans doing glute ham raises, but I've never hurt myself training properly. Like, this doesn't happen because you're in control, right? So the speed variable in the absence of control is where things cause injuries. Any other questions or comments? Go ahead, Richard.
Yeah, I don't specifically have a question, but I want to take this opportunity to say thank you to you, all the coaches, all the team behind the scenes. Obviously, for me, especially Coach Andrew. You guys put so much into this, and you really don't know how much your clients really appreciate it. It's a lot of work. We know that. Yeah, you get paid for it. You guys put a lot of work into it. And I really do appreciate it. It's helped me tremendously, and I thank you for it.
Thanks, man. Yeah, the coaches do put an enormous amount of time, effort, and sacrifice in, but it's worth it, right? Like, when we see you guys changing your life and, you know, hearing feedback, I mean, it makes a big difference for us, Richard. So thank you. And I think I speak for all the coaches in saying we love what we do. We love being able to work with you guys. And, you know, one of the good things that this brand and this business brings is a really great community of people. Like, there's no assholes in our community, right? There really isn't. And I think it's like something that maybe the brand represents is just like good people coming through here and doing great things. So, you know, thank you to all of you guys for being part of it. Certainly the coaches. Thanks, Chris. Yeah, I think we're all passionate about it.
Hey, Ben, I have a question for you.
Sure, Craig.
So when you were talking about like staying mentally locked into every rep, every inch of every rep, I try my best to do that. And after my workouts, if I do it successfully, I feel like I just finished a freaking like round of golf. Like, I'm just mentally exhausted. And I was just wondering if you have any tips for sort of overcoming that exhaustion, because I work out first thing in the morning and then I got to be like on for work the rest of the day. And that's a struggle.
Yeah, man. That's very real. And so that's, you know, just kind of speaking to that real quickly, I think that's why most people don't do it, because it's mentally just as hard as it is physically. And most people don't want to do anything that's mentally challenging. They just want to coast. And yeah, I think I do have a solution, man, or at least something that can support you. So to my understanding of my limited understanding of brain chemistry, the substrate that tends to get, there's two substrates that tend to get burned through fastest. The first one is just ATP and energy. And so the more you do it, the better your brain gets at producing energy, right? Literally ATP production. So keep at it and you'll get better at it. So the other kind of way to approach brain energy is aerobic fitness. So I don't know what your aerobic fitness looks like, Craig, but aerobic fitness is a really important way to optimize energy production in the body, right? So aerobic energy production is ATP production in the presence of oxygen, which is low intensity day-to-day function. So improving your aerobic capacity will make a big difference. Improving your aerobic capacity is one of our six foundational objectives of phase one. So in the first 6 weeks of your coaching, first 6 to 12 weeks, you should be improving your aerobic fitness. And the reason we do that is because it not only helps you, your brain recover better, it helps your body recover better. So if any of you are struggling with your ability to recover between sets, your ability to recover between workouts, then aerobic fitness is probably the culprit, and we want to ramp that up a little bit. And then as far as some other kind of supplements that you could take to really improve how that feels, there's two that I use religiously. The first one is alpha GPC. GPC stands for glycerol phosphocholine. It's really a source of choline, and acetylcholine is burned through very quickly with anything that's cognitively demanding. So as I said, the things that are getting burned through are acetylcholine and ATP. So you want to replenish ATP with obviously aerobic fitness and just great nutrition. Alpha GPC is the number one highly absorbable source of choline. I can put in the chat if you don't understand the term. And the third thing that I'd suggest that can help is MCT, medium chain triglyceride oil or powder, is just a natural source of brain energy. Like it's giving your ketone, giving your body ketones that your brain can use for fuel. So like you can use ketones, you can use MCT powder. I like Bubs. Bubs was a longtime sponsor of the podcast. We actually dropped them as a sponsor because the quality of their product sucked for about a year. They've gone back to the original formula just in the last like 2 months, maybe a month. I started using them. They sent me a tub like a month ago and I was like, ah, it's back. The quality was really bad. I guess they changed suppliers and I was like, you guys can't, like this product sucks, but it's actually back now again. So I don't know if they're going to sponsor the podcast again, but I actually believe in their product again.
Sweet. Thanks, man. Appreciate it, man.
Yeah, my pleasure. So there's a couple of people that have written Alpha GPC in the chat. And so Alpha GPC, guys, is available on Designs for Health. All of you guys as being part of this coaching have a login for a practitioner account on Designs for Health. Does anyone not know that? So as being part of our coaching program, you get a practitioner login. So a practitioner login means like it's only supposed to be reserved for doctors and functional medicine people. You guys get your own login to be able to purchase from that company, which is just the highest quality products that we know of. And Alpha GPC comes in a dropper. It tastes great. I put it in my coffee. That kind of acts as my sugar. It's like a sweetener. Yeah, sorry, Ross. So in like the original emails, like the first week of emails, you guys all get login instructions. And if you guys don't know that or don't know how to access it, just drop Sarah an email, S-A-R-A at muscleintelligence.com. She'll be able to hook you guys up. And if you search your like emails from the first week of when you started coaching, there'll be a login instruction there. I know you guys get a lot of emails from us. So sorry about that. We're working on that. We're working on a solution for that. Matt says, Jimmy, it's his first week. Well, let me see you, Jimmy. Where are you, man? Still here? There you are. Jimmy, what's up, man?
Hey, Ben. How's it going? It's good to be here.
How are you? Where are you in the world, Jimmy?
I am down in Kentucky, Elizabethtown, Kentucky.
Nice. This is your first week, your first call or first week in the coaching?
First week, first call, first nice. Coaching. So, yeah.
Tell me about your goals.
Working to increase some muscle mass. So hoping to put on maybe 10 or more pounds in the next
why is that important?
3 or 4 months. You know, it's something I have really worked at over many years, and I always seem to, anytime I try to grow in size, I end up putting on way more body fat than I intend to. And then it's just the cycle of cutting and then feeling like I'm too small and then trying the same thing again and failing. So working with Steve, and he's going to get me straightened out.
You're a lucky man to work with Steve. I'll say this. So calories don't build muscle, right? Calories are the substrate that builds muscle. Mm-hmm. Training is the signal. So you have to create a signal to be able to use the calories to adapt. And so what most people miss is they're just not doing a great job in creating the signal. And so what we are, I think, masterful at is teaching you guys how to optimize the signal for muscle building. And now the signal for all of you guys is potentially different. The threshold for signal is different. Your ability to generate a signal is different. So that could be genetic, that could be physical capability. So in your mind, start paying attention to, and actually, I was talking to somebody about this morning, even Steve. I forget. So I was talking to somebody about, they've got a client who's a bit of a hard gainer. And I was saying, hey, this is the program that I create for someone who's a hard gainer. And we just want to make you like positionally strong, right? So, you know, as an example, it was Andrew. So we want to make you positionally strong. And so what that means is your ability to generate force from muscles comes from ultimately first being able to be strong in every, so if you picture a range of motion, let's say it's a bicep curl, we've got, I don't know, like say 90, well, more than 90, 120 degrees of elbow flexion. And I need to be strong in every segment along that range. So a good thing for you to start considering when you're training is, well, where am I not strong? And rather than avoiding those positions where most people do, we want to spend time in those positions and go, okay, well, I'm really bad in this position, so let's spend a little time there. And so it may be at the bottom of a squat, maybe at the bottom of a lunge or a Bulgarian split squat or a deadlift, or like find a position where, you know, it's challenging for you and spend an additional amount of time there trying consciously to increase contraction in those positions. So the more, so going to a position is not the objective. It's going to a position and seeing how much you can actually actively contract muscles in those positions. So what most people do when they're saying they're trying to build muscles, they're focused on the number of reps. Like, I got to get 8 reps done because my program says 8. My suggestion, and I wish I could do this, but I can't because it goes against what everybody currently knows about fitness, is to throw away the number of reps. I don't give a hoot how many reps you do. I don't care. What I care about is how much time and how much tension can you generate it through a specific rep. So it's, or range. So trying to like, one, maximize tension, and two, vary time, right? That's ultimately what exercise is. So yeah, just think through like, what exercise am I in? And could I contract this muscle harder in every position? Start with that. And if you start doing that, you'll notice one, it's really, really hard. Two, your brain doesn't want to do it. Your brain goes, let me the hell out of here. Because it induces almost a fear response. So you have to learn to calm your fear response and stay in those positions. I call it getting closer to the proverbial fire. So yeah, play with it, man. Like, slow down your ranges and ask yourself, could I contract harder? If someone put a gun to my head, could I contract this harder? Every rep should be really, really not easy. Jimmy, do you have any questions about training or anything that comes up for you?
Man, nothing comes to mind just yet.
It's always hard when you're put on the spot, man. I understand. It's okay. Yeah. So, man, I look forward to having you on every week. Do your best to make it every week. We'll do our best to always provide value, give you some perspective on how you can be more effective. And guys, I think I talk about this every single week, but the goal of this coaching is not just to get you all in great shape, right? That's, to me, that's the side effect. I think the goal is to all make you more physically capable, right? And the more physically capable you are and the more metabolically capable you are, the better your results are forever. So your results are a side effect. Not like, while in your mind it's the goal, it's actually a side effect, right? If you're really physically capable, results are inevitable, right? If you're really metabolically capable, results are inevitable. Results are a side effect of being highly capable. So what does metabolically capable mean? It means if I eat food, my body produces energy that I need. It means if I want to go for a walk, my body produces the energy I need. If I want to go for a run, body produces the energy I need. If I want to train, body produces the energy I need. And so Craig, as an example, said, Ben, I train in the morning, I'm mentally exhausted by the time I'm done. Your body hasn't yet adapted to producing the energy you need. So your metabolic capability is not at an optimal place. We still want to keep working on that. How do we work on that? Training, aerobic fitness, reducing stress, reducing inflammation, optimizing gut health and sleep. Those are your 6 pillars of the first program. It's always the same for everyone, right? Once you can check all those 6 boxes, then you can move on to a subsequent phase, which is like, you know, improving intensity, volume, et cetera. But in the first phase, let's get your body really physically capable and metabolically capable. Questions?
And I've got one for you.
Shoot, Chris.
I've heard you mention before an interview or in an interview that one of the things that got you into meditating was pushing into that zone of like, I've got 1, 2, or 3 more reps left. And your conversation with Jimmy around muscle contraction kind of reminded me about that. Can you elaborate on that a little bit? Just because I've been very much trying to explore that, and it's been really cool to take, just shift my mindset around lifting and actually contracting muscles, creating fatigue versus just moving the weight.
Yeah. So the first step is creating a deep level of internal awareness. That's step one. That's not the complete step, but that's step one. So what that means is I have to become very internally aware, which is the term is interoception, right? So proprioception is being aware of the world around me. Interoception is being aware of the world inside of me. So I have to become very, very acutely aware of my body and what's happening on the inside. So I'm literally trying to envision muscle fibers going like this and muscle fibers going like this. I'm like, am I taking it to its full length? Could I take it a little millimeter further? Am I shortening it as much as I possibly could so it's uncomfortable? And that's step one. And I'm becoming deeply internally aware of everything going on in my body, right? So as an example right now, Chris, if I say, make yourself aware of your butt in the seat, you bring your focus to what your butt feels like against a chair, but then you forgot about what your feet feel like on the floor. You forgot about what your hands feel like on the desk. You forgot about the warmth of the seat against your back. You forgot about the tension in your jaw. You forgot about all this information. True mastery of exercise is I'm not just focused on one signal in my body. I'm focused on all of it. And I can feel all of it at the same time. So I know exactly where my ankle is. I know exactly where my knee is. I know exactly where my hip is. I know exactly where my lower back tension is. I know exactly where I am in my breath cycle. Like true mastery of physical capability is really, really nuanced physical awareness. So that took me a long time, right? And so that would be my first step is like, one, bring your attention inside your body. Two, bring your attention to all of the feedback, all of the information, and like, and being able to kind of keep your consciousness on all of it while, you know, I'm like, where am I creating tension? Where does my body want to break down? Where does it want to stop? And start just taking this inventory of what's happening inside of your body. Then you can start pushing into keeping all that information. So it's almost like I'm, you know, I have all this information kind of over here spinning, you know, in the background of my consciousness, and I'm still feeling and being aware of it. And then I take on one piece of information, like contracting this muscle I'm trying to train as much as I possibly can, realizing that I'm going to move into discomfort. But discomfort is now at this point, because I've got all this other information, discomfort is just another part of the information. It's just like, I don't even notice it as discomfort. It's not a dominant signal. It's just another signal. And so then I'm intentionally moving myself into it and trying to deeper and deeper and deeper into the discomfort, which is the burn or the hard contraction or the amount of tension or whatever it is, right?
Sure.
So I don't know if that makes sense or if that gives you a bit of a direction, man, but you could see how that very quickly turns into a meditative experience. So if you're a meditator, you'll know when you're sitting in meditation and a fly lands on your nose, you get an itch. Your brain is pulled to that little proprioceptive place and you want to go, I want to scratch. No, you don't scratch. You just go back to remembering all the information. You go, oh, there's all this other information. And that signal kind of gets lost, right? Like, I don't even realize that my lower back is tight, or I didn't even realize that, I don't know, I feel tension somewhere in my body. It just gets lost. And so an expert meditator feels a cloud of sensation and doesn't get pulled into the amplitude of one. Does that make sense?
It does. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's how your body, that's how training is. It becomes this meditative journey of like, can I master my mind to not get sucked into the rabbit hole of like one uncomfortable sensation, but still keep it wide on all of them.
Yeah. And essentially the sensation or the indicator that breaks you out of that meditation or that set is the form. Like sacrificing form, basically.
If you get to the point that I'm talking about, it's not form anymore. It's like, I simply can't do another.
Wow. Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. There's no more form consideration at that point. Form is there. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. It's like, there's no chance in hell that I'm getting another segment of a rep. And then, you know, the next level that you'll invite in is like someone else who understands how to train this way to help push your body with some forced reps. And I'll tell you, man, finding a training partner who trains at that level is the impossible dream. I've had two in my life. And that just takes it to a whole different level. And that, because like they get what you're trying to do, they get where you are mentally, and they can be there, push you harder without pulling you out of it. Again, that's, if you ever come to camp, I'll pull you through that. I'll give you some like, you know, kind of like some depth that you've never experienced before.
Looking forward to it. I'll be there in December.
So. Awesome. Yeah. Awesome.
Thanks, man.
Russ, you just want to show off how jacked you are. Russ is like, I don't want him to say, I just want to show these babies.
I literally just got back from the gym and doing the workout Chris gave me, so I haven't had a chance to change yet. So,
dude, I don't care. Man, you show up in underwear. You ever meet Spencer, man? Spencer show up in his underwear, like walk around naked in his house. Like, Spencer, are you pants on? Like, where is Spencer, by the way, Chris?
I'm not sad I missed that. Two questions. One, I was a little bit late getting on the call. You were talking in the Telegram group about the rebounder. Did you discuss that or no?
No.
The other thing I want to ask, just to put it out there, I've seen a lot of stuff about the value of grounding, and rubber and plastic shoes were one of the greatest detriments to our health because it blocks that signal to the earth. Is there such a thing as a leather or natural fiber shoe only that does not block that signal that you know of?
Yeah, I don't know what they are, but I've definitely seen them. You could just look it up. They definitely exist. So here's the thing, man. Most of the ground you walk on is not the earth. Most of the ground you walk on is concrete, some artificial earth. So you're not really blocking your connection to the earth anyways. Man, just become the weird dude who doesn't wear shoes. I'm the weird dude who doesn't wear shoes. Almost always walking in the streets of Toronto today with no shoes. People are like, who's this weirdo? Obviously worry about glass and nails and shit in your feet, but I just wear normal shoes. And whenever I get a chance to put my feet in some natural environment, I do. But there's definitely brands that have natural soles. Like, I've seen them. I've just never purchased them.
I live in LA. I would have to worry about syringes and human feces. So
hey, don't do that.
What about the rebounder?
Yeah. So just for context for everyone else, someone in the Telegram group, if you're not already all in the Telegram group, get in it, please. Sarah, let us know if you're not in it, and Sarah will send you the invite. So a rebounder, effectively a trampoline, right? So when I hear the term rebounder, I think of these little ones that are like bouncing in space. That's not what I'm about. I literally go to the trampoline park with my kids when they're here almost every day. And the thing that I've noticed that's an incredible benefit that I would have never thought about is as people who train for muscle building, we train in this very linear fashion, right? It becomes very isolating, very linear. And if you do it for too long, and you guys will all get this, anyone who's trained for a long time, you lose the dynamic nature of the human body. The human body is meant to be very dynamic, very responsive. I can change directions very fast. And if you train linearly too long, you almost become rigid. You become like Frankenstein, right? You start losing the dynamic nature of your body. And so what the trampoline specifically, not necessarily rebound, but what trampoline has done is it forces you to react. It forces you to be reactive rather than intentional. So we're literally trying to train intentional muscle contraction in the gym, which builds muscle. But what we literally lose is this reflexive nature, right? And I'll explain this in a way that's a little more scientific. Top down versus bottom up. Top down means my brain tells my muscles to contract. My brain tells my bicep to contract. Very different than if someone throws me a ball and I catch it. Right. So when I'm training for muscle building, it's top down. Brain says quads contract. Brain says calves contract. If I jump, it's reflexive. It's bottom up. My nervous system and muscular system is telling the brain where I am in space. Both of these are very important for long-term well-being of the system. So the benefit I've received from trampoline goes so far beyond what I would have expected in keeping me dynamic, keeping me reflexive, and the ability to just respond, right? My body feels the environment, feels where I am in space, and my brain reacts, right? So rather than the opposite. And I think, Russ, if you have the space in your home to invest in a trampoline, I couldn't recommend it more highly. I would suggest build it into the ground. So what they do now is they literally come in and like dig out the ground, almost like a pool, and put it so it's So it's ground level, so nobody hurts themselves. But man, what a great addition to a backyard that is, or anyone's at home, I would suggest.
I may have to move my axe throwing booth.
Put them both there. You figure it out. Just don't do them at the same time. Although that would be a fun sport, right? Jump up in the air, backflip, boom. Yeah, and I'll tell you, it's such a hard thing, man, because we're so rigid. Like, even just doing like what they call a seat drop, where you jump and you fall to your butt and you land on your feet. Like in the beginning, you're like, and then eventually, like, oh, okay, I gotta learn to like flow and be relaxed. Yeah, it's a fun endeavor, man. Keeps me young. Chris just dropped some Earth Runners into the chat for anyone who wants to see some shoes that are not rubber. All right, gents, got to roll. You guys get out of here. I appreciate you. Thank you all for being here. Hopefully we provide some value this week. Guys, I always aim to provide value. If we get provide some value, awesome. Great to see your faces. Keep working hard. It's always inspirational to see you guys transforming as much as you do. Thank you, coaches, for being here. And thank you guys for being here. We'll see you all next week. Have a good one.